Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. This is Willem Vanderhorst, your host for the show. All right, already another episode. I am late publishing. I'm behind on just about everything, which is exciting because I have too much things to do, new projects to work on, still shifting and organizing a bunch of stuff and or recording. But I have to apologize to Jennifer, my guest today, and to my other guest. If you're listening to this and we talked in the past few weeks, know that I'm just a little bit behind my editing, but it's coming. All the episodes are coming and I'm catching up, basically. I mean, for the people who are interested in the podcast, the service I'm using that had really clear sound, turns out that it's now the second episode, and I'm afraid there might be a couple more at least, where the sound is not exactly in sync and it's taken me a lot longer to edit. And I was behind editing just because of other things going on. So anyway, it's coming. And this conversation, I had really, really fantastic conversation with Jennifer. Jennifer's the Chief Experience Officer at the American Marketing Association. So we talk about design, but we also geeked out a little bit about Marvel and about Marvel movies. We recorded this conversation. So after Captain Marvel came out, like a few weeks after, but still a couple of weeks before Endgame, our Avengers Endgame came out. So there are spoilers for Captain Marvel. It's not really showing anymore. So I mean, just so you know, there are spoilers and we warn again, there's a few small spoilers for Captain Marvel, not massive. Really, we mainly talk about the music that goes along with the main fight scene. We're not really going into the details. But we do go into some other details about video gaming and about Destiny 2 and her comparison and experience of designing for the marketing industry and working with the marketing industry versus the kind of difficulties that game designers have to deal with. And so that was fun. So that was really interesting. And we obviously talked about her background in design and her background in marketing and software engineering and what's going on with the American Marketing Association. So really, really great conversation. So just a couple of things before we go ahead with the rest of the conversation. I'm thinking about a potential pivot or certainly an experiment, because I like to experiment and change things and switch things up. I've been, as you know, or as you might know if you've listened to more than one episode, I'm interested in playing games and gaming. And I talk to game designers and I also talk to strategists and other professionals and designers within more marketing and advertising industry. And I'm still looking at ways to ally both audiences together and still look at what interests me and what do I want to do with the podcast. And there's more and more podcasts coming out from actors, well, people that are kind of known within the advertising industry. And of course, there's tons of podcasts like that everywhere. Anyway, and Mark Pollard's is one of them. And I'm discovering some other podcasts that I haven't had time to check out yet. Like I think one is called the Disruption Podcast out of New York. All that to say, I'm now working and toying with an idea of what if I do what's called an actual play podcast, where you record people playing a game, in which case, and right now I'm thinking tabletop role-playing games, indie tabletop role-playing games specifically, with a creative professional audience. So what if I actually invite strategists to come and play a role-playing game and re-record it, basically is what I'm thinking of. So I'm saying this because if you're interested or if you're interested in the idea, if you do play games, or if you want to be on the show, just don't hesitate sending me a note. Get in touch either via email. My email is Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M, at icecreamforeveryone.net, my main website. Or you can find me on Twitter at icvillem, letters I and C for ice cream. Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M, or Willem Vanderhorst, my main name. And if you listen to the podcast, you listen to the episode, it makes a whole lot of difference if you share the show with other people, just so that more people get to know it. And take time for a review. Give me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes/iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. If there's an opportunity to give a rating and a review, it lets more people find the podcast. And even better, just like share it with a friend that you think might be interested in hearing it. I think that's about it for now. Yeah, without further ado, here's Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks, Will.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. It's great. It's one of those happy and I would say serendipitous encounters as I regularly browse through LinkedIn, both for keeping in touch with people and keep on the lookout for anybody that seems interesting to have on the show. And you know how there's usually recommended people to be in contact with on the sidebar. And that's where I came across your name. And I was like, oh, the American Marketing Association. That sounds like an interesting set. And then I just read a little bit more of your profile and got in touch. And here we are.
Great. Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's see, where should we start? I was thinking, so of course, there's a number of different areas we can start, but I thought maybe we go with pop culture in this one. And I saw you recently tweet about Captain Marvel and the number of the box offices it was doing. So I was suspected. So did you, I mean, I'm guessing, did you watch it?
I did watch it. I watched it with, let's see, my son and my husband over the weekend.
Awesome. What did you think? And do you regularly follow all the Marvel superhero movies or not so much?
I do. Yeah, we're a big kind of nerdy gaming family, but also into, I wouldn't say we're diehard, you know, have to see it opening weekend fans, but we're definitely into the Marvel movies, a lot of it because we had Marvel stock for a while. And I think it rolled into, I want to say it merged with Disney or Disney bought, I don't know, something happened with that. But yeah. Anyway.
Bought them.
Yeah. And I've always been a fan of Captain Marvel. And, you know, there's just not a whole lot of female superheroes. So I, kind of perk up and take interest. And especially lately, there's been a lot of, you know, girl power kind of going around. And I think it's interesting to see what happens in the film world and how, you know, art gets, you know, how reality gets translated into everything that's going on gets translated into art. So,
yeah. Did it satisfy your expectations from any of those perspectives? I don't know if you had any expectations.
But. Yeah, that's an interesting question because before we went, I noticed, I always look at reviews like any diligent, I guess, digital person now or any person now. Yeah. And, I looked on, Metacritic and I noticed there were a lot of really negative reviews that sounded very similar. I found out after the fact that there was this whole push, my husband heard something on NPR or read something about white supremacist groups like intentionally putting bad reviews up for the movie, which is fascinating because I didn't know that going in, but I did know something seemed off about the reviews. So going into it, I was kind of, they're kind of big, dumb, big, dumb action movies, you know, and that's kind of what I like about them.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have these expectations of going really deep. Sometimes some of them surprise you and have some more depth to it, I think. But the interesting thing about Captain Marvel in particular is the difference between how my husband perceived it and how I perceived it. He saw it, I think, as just, it was all right. You know, when there was a scene in it and, have you seen the movie?
Yeah. I've seen it. And, okay. I'm sorry for any spoilers for anybody else, but yes, it's been out for a little while. So hopefully we're not.
Yeah. So I see. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Bit of a spoiler alert here, but the scene, you know, when she finally, the fight scene, when I think they're playing No Doubt, it actually gave me chills,
yeah.
Which is funny because it's just like any other fight scene. But I think it's something about the experience of being a woman and a female and seeing, especially in my age group, I think, in my generation, and seeing fight scenes like that, that really pushes almost obviously so on the theme of, being female and powerful and a superhero. I think, I certainly experience it from my perspective and my life experiences that I bring into it are different than my husband. So we had an interesting conversation afterwards about how we saw the movie differently.
Yeah, that's really great to point out. And it's one of the things I have to, I mean, I don't have to, but I do remind myself of that it's not necessarily, it's wireless for the whole audience because, and I don't know if it's being a guy, but partly perhaps being a guy, I had probably the same kind of opinion as your husband. I thought it was great and it was fun, but it didn't reach me in the same way. And I didn't have that experience seeing Captain Marvel here. I think I saw it where there was not a lot of people in the cinema showroom that night. But when Wonder Woman came out and I went to see it near the weekend opening or an evening, I can't remember. Anyway, the cinema room was full and a lot of women who were really, really full on cheering when fight scenes were on. And I realized at that point that I was like, wow, this is a whole other deal for women than it is for me. And it's interesting just to remind myself of that.
Yeah, I do. I will say I was disappointed because I think that I could talk for a while about this, but anyway, I did think that the storyline and the intention behind, and I did feel a lot of that the intention behind the story was better than actually how, you know, the result of it. I think some of it was, I do agree with other people and that actress wasn't, you know, I kind of wanted to see someone with a little more humor and just the delivery of it was a little off. I still appreciated it, but I think it could have been much better. I don't know if it was the direction or the actress. But the combination of the throwback to the 80s and the kind of humor that didn't really exist in Wonder Woman was more serious, which I thoroughly enjoyed Wonder Woman, but it was more serious. This one was, you know, had that kind of fun, especially I think, you know, the combination of the fight scene with No Doubt, you know, kind of spoke to me. I probably my generation too, because, you know, hearing that song and that brings to mind certain feelings and experiences too, that I could tell they were trying to play with that. I think it could have been pushed further. So yeah. in that way, I think it was a little disappointing, but
interesting.
Still good. Yeah.
Yeah. On that point, I wonder, I mean, I'll see if I have the opportunity to talk to younger women and younger people in general about their experience of portraying the 90s, because it's when I grew up too. So that was like all the songs and a lot of stuff was very meaningful to me. But anyhow, it was a great movie. And I'm also having this conversation, one I thought was a fun opener. And also, if this episode is likely to be published just before or just after the next Avengers coming out. So I don't know. Do you already have family plans to go see that, the big new one, that they're already selling out of tickets for the opening weekend?
We probably won't do. I mean, we're definitely going to be excited to see it. But I don't like the headache of crowded theater and seeing it, you know. I mean, I get the excitement of seeing it with a bunch of people who are super excited, you know, and people in the audience getting, you have that, but we probably won't go see it immediately.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm quite excited, but I don't feel like I absolutely have to go the first couple of days. If I do for whatever reason, then fine, but I'll wait a couple of days. I'll just try to avoid the spoilers between now and then.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, let's go a little bit back then. And where are you actually from? Because I saw that you studied in the South, I believe, but I was wondering where you grew up.
So I grew up in Tennessee. You're correct. I grew up in Tennessee, Hendersonville, Tennessee, which is basically a suburb of Nashville. And went to school at University of Tennessee in Knoxville. They had a really great design program, still have a really great design program, especially for such a good bargain on education. I look at the cost of education now, and even back then, it was a really good deal for education.
How did you get into design in the first place, if I may ask?
Sure. Like,
how did you decide to go towards that?
So I go way back to when I was born. No, when I was younger, probably about 8-ish, around that age, I started showing interest in art and would draw all the time. And then I started getting interested in fashion design. I used to actually trace the models in the girl magazines that I would have. I'd trace the models and then create my own clothes for them.
Uh-huh. So, how old are you then?
That lasted until about ninth grade, I want to say, ninth or 10th grade. And then I started getting more serious about art, studio art, fine art, and painting. And I went to Governor's School for the Arts, which was an amazing, defining moment.
Is that a particular school or is that a...
Yeah, it's you go for the summer. I don't know if they still have it. So it was Governor School for the Arts, Tennessee, and we went to MTSU. We went to a college. We stayed in a dorm for several weeks, and you took college classes. You had to actually.
But prior to going to college, then portfolio. Technically,
yeah, you had to. Yeah, it's basically like college, but it's immersive in the arts.
Okay.
So you had to submit a portfolio and get accepted into it. So they only accepted a certain number of people, and there was like drama and theater students there. I was in the studio art program. Music, all sorts of things. Anyway, so and then they bring in performances. So we'd see the Nashville Ballet and all these great, it's just immersive experience in the arts. It was wonderful.
Cool. And so was drawing all of your first kind of interest going in there? And did you extend to any other form or art forms after that or?
I think I went to art school. I went to Memphis College of Art my first year and majored in painting. And, it's kind of one of those moments where it's like people always said I was good at it. And then I gradually learned that it's a learned skill, being able to paint what you see, for example. I could do a great still life. And got to where I could do great landscapes and portraits and was really into figure drawing and figure painting. And when I transferred to University of Tennessee, I thought that I wanted to go into illustration because I thought, well, what am I going to do for a career for this? Like, what do you do with art? Like, there aren't many, the term starving artist is a thing for a reason. I had to make a decision. So I thought I wanted to go into illustration, right, for a living. And you had to make a decision between either going through the fine art program or going through the graphic design illustration program. And my advisor told me that it's easier to go back to, go from design to studio art than it was the other way because you have portfolio review. So I decided to go into design and the rest is kind of history. I had a really great teaching assistant that showed me about creativity and concept and how design wasn't necessarily about drawing well or being able to, have aesthetically pleasing pieces, but rather it was about solving business solutions. And from there I was hooked.
Yeah. And just as you were getting interested in this on your way to the degree or even during the degree, because we were talking about that a second ago, were comic books part of your growing up or?
No, not. It's interesting. No, not at all. I know in college I had a good friend that was in design with me and we had talked about doing like kind of an underground comic.
Yeah.
And we had this, we started planning out the story, but we were just had way too many other things going on that we never did it. But it was, female superhero character and, with interesting, it would have been interesting if we'd actually done it, but we didn't.
All right, cool. And another question I usually ask, I also have this interest in playing games. So I was wondering, how did you play as a child? So I'm expecting drawing was part of it, but what other forms of play did you particularly enjoy?
You mean play as in like playing outside?
It could be games. It could be playing like the kinds of play you did with kids. Did you play, you know, a lot outside indoors or reading?
My generation grew up riding our bike. You'd go home from school and you'd ride your bikes and you stay until it's dark and then you come in and have dinner. There was a lot of that, you know.
Was it a small town where you grew up? Like just kind of countryside-ish?
No, it was a suburb. It was very much suburb. We knew people on our block. We went to school. We went to the bus stop, same bus stop, same friends through school. It was a good, you know, solid, normal, very average upbringing. I was into dance a lot. So, you know, I think especially as I got into high school, I was on the dance team and really got into dance in terms of, you know, even in terms of, you know, at the time I didn't see it that way, but looking back, I definitely do. Dance is amazing in that it's a physical expression of art and creativity. So I've always been fascinated by dance throughout my entire life.
Awesome. Very cool. Do you have any favorite either shows or dance shows that you particularly enjoy or would recommend seeing if they come through whatever town people are listening in?
You mean live shows? I don't mean...
It could be either live shows or style of dance that you particularly enjoy or type of performance, or it could be either specific or general, whatever comes to mind.
I enjoy all sorts of dance. We just saw Stomp, which is, you know, kind of like a, you know, very approachable, fun. I like all forms of it. I actually taught ballroom dance in college briefly. It's all different, right? Ballroom dance, you're working with you're a team, it's two people and you're working together on creating and expressing yourselves together, which is it's a whole other fascinating kind of look at. But then group dance, you know, like performances, you know, be they ballet or like a stomp where you're working with a full group of people and choreographing it together. That's something that I'm fascinated by that I don't really get a chance to as an adult really participate in. I can only really watch. I mean, I guess I could, you know, dig into it, but especially as I get older, it becomes less of an option. Choreographing an entire group of people and how that works and how they express themselves. But yeah, I'm fascinated by that form of creativity.
Awesome. Cool. And so and then you started your career and you had a long career on the design side, particularly. What kind of graphic design or work were you doing in that phase?
So I've always...
I say graphic, I'm not exactly sure, but...
Yeah, so my degree is technically in graphic design. And, you know, in college, the internet was brand new, right? Not an area where designers, like web design was not really yet a thing. We were exploring it for sure. In fact, some of our projects were about exploring the web. I think throughout my career, I was always fascinated by what's next. And I'm sure a lot of designers and a lot of people and even technology careers type of careers are the same. I started out in broadcast design or largely in broadcast design. My internship was with a film production company, very small film production company, but we were doing fascinating things. My boss was kind of a self-made cinematographer and director that would do a lot of documentaries and was very passionate about that. But we did a lot of work for A&E, Discovery Channel, lots of corporate videos, but that were more in depth for TVA, for Tennessee Valley Authority. And, I was kind of spoiled. You know, I look back and I think, you know, I was really spoiled by him because he pursued his passion above all else. And I think I had it in my head coming out of school that that's what everybody did. And that's what work was like, right? Which, you know, there was a, you know, hard reality to face a couple of years after. But yeah, so I learned video editing and motion graphics. I was really good at After Effects during that time. Got really good at, you know, with the entire Adobe suite, but then also, you know, learned a lot about telling a story through graphics and through really video. And I think, you know, had to kind of pause on that for a while because the web and the internet they started with Flash and there was a little bit of that starting to happen. But it was really constrained to being able to really utilize a lot of the more sophisticated, I guess, ways of storytelling and really being dynamic with that. It was very static for a very long time. Fast forward to, moved to Boston for a couple years. That's a big leap, but moved to Boston for a couple years and worked, actually helped, ironically, moved from Knoxville to Boston and helped create the do-it-yourself network graphics. Worked for a company called Lacani Goldman that was doing amazing stuff in broadcast design at that time. And we created just when the DIY network was starting, which is, I think they're owned by the it's somehow related to HGTV at that time. And HGTV was based in Knoxville. So I ended up like on client calls with people that I knew from Knoxville, which was kind of a weird thing. Small world, right?
Yeah. Of course, it is a small world. And the more experiences you get in those niches, the more people you know in it, for sure.
Sure. Yeah. So I did a lot of branding and that, you know, I guess you could call it marketing. But at the time I've always seen myself as a designer and, you know, thinking through design problems and, creative solutions for that. We did. So I kind of did a crossover when I was in Boston, worked for a company. This was, you know, in the early 2000s. Well, it would have been late 90s into 2000.
Okay.
And worked for a company called Thought Bubble that did primarily entertainment. Like it was a web agency, but an interactive agency. But we did primarily film and TV interactive projects or web projects. So it started to make a crossover there, and then fast forward to Chicago and ended up at Harpo. And that's really where I kind of, you know, was there for 9 years. So I kind of grew up through the .com, when the bubble burst from the big, during that, through that time into really digging into user experience design. And that's really where that part of my career kind of got into full force.
Yeah, I was wondering how you shifted and how you viewed the titles between design and strategy and when that shift came around for you or how that was represented.
Well, I think it was that shift definitely happened for me during those, you know, what was it, 2001 through 2010. So that was around the time when UX design was really growing up and, you know, blowing up.
Just to make sure for anybody listening who's not familiar with it, can you just describe how you see what UX design is?
Sure. I see it a little differently now. It's okay, kind of evolved through the years, but at that time, you know, kind of going from designing web pages, if you will, and buttons and to really thinking about user flows and user journeys through a site, starting to look at how do you use both interface design and information architecture? So what pages are created where, what leads to what, you know, even down to like where on the page stuff is, all of that wireframing, thinking about how pages flow through the site. We would actually look at, you know, at Harpo, for example, some of the challenges there will probably never be recreated. I mean, there will be something sort of close to that, but what would happen is, you know, Oprah had so much influence on the show at that time. So you'd have a show, you'd have an enormous amount of traffic coming to the site for a specific topic. And our website was largely, the revenue was largely display ad based, right? So page views were important, and even specific views of certain pages, you know, if we had sponsored content or advertising that needed advertising pages or microsites that needed some traffic, we would actually be looking at the site live and thinking, okay, what do we change or how do we take advantage of this page that's getting a lot of traffic? You know, if we had, you know, there was a moment where it was, we called it an endearing term, chicken gate, where she announced a coupon for KFC and it actually like blew up our site, right? All these people came to the website to get this coupon for a free meal at KFC, you know, whatever. So, you know, we had to think about, okay, how do we leverage this site, whether it's our people going looking for, obviously the number one thing they're looking for is a free coupon. So we could surface on the same, you know, related page, we could surface other deals and sweepstakes that we had, especially if they were related to food or restaurants or shopping. But in addition to that, things like comfort food and recipes and things that are related to whatever topic it is. And we can literally watch the traffic live. And it's like, you know, when you look at ants and you can like kind of draw an imaginary line with your finger and watch the ants kind of get confused. It was like setting up these cones of like trying to kind of guide this mob of people through the internet.
Wow. And so just to make sure I got this, because I think I understood from what you're saying, but just because maybe my own lack of knowledge, but you were working on, you were managing the Oprah show's website at the time.
Yes.
As well as the broadcasting. Okay. Got it. Right.
Yes.
That makes sense. Yes. That would be a lot of people and a lot of traffic for sure.
For sure. Yeah. And it was very unique business challenges, right? Because, you know, we had to be able to support a huge amount of traffic in a short period of time. But they'd come in and get what they need and go out, right? They were looking for something very specific. So, it, you know, typically, right. You know, the show was pretty much the driver for a lot of our traffic. There were other things too. But yeah, so it was a fascinating time because it's very addicting, right? To be able to look at, you know, this was just starting to be the time when you could actually look at this stuff and do something about it and affect it and influence it. So, you know, previously you'd put up pages and you'd be sure you could look at clicks and click throughs on, you know, whatever people in traffic to your site. But we were actually just starting to be able to dig into what is it that people are looking at it? What are the behaviors? What's driving those behaviors? How can we actually think about what's going on in the user's mind when they're coming to this site? And deliver to them what they're looking for. That was my first kind of glimpse at that in terms of the web. I actually, if you go back before that in the late 90s, I guess it was just before that time. In the late 90s, there was a Nightline episode that I saw. I bring this up all the time because it was a defining moment in my career.
I'm sorry, I don't know what Nightline is.
It's like a TV, a late night news show.
Having grown up in Europe, that's my excuse anyway. Late night TV show, like a series or a news show?
And it's a series, but it's a news show. So it's like, it's not, it's like an in-depth, like really like
investigative.
Barbara Walters. Yeah, it's investigative. Yeah, exactly. And they do like in-depth stories. So this one was called The Deep Dive, and you can find it on YouTube now, actually. It seems very dated now, but a lot of the principles behind it still hold true. But it was called The Deep Dive, and they did an immersive kind of couple of days with IDEO. Are you familiar with IDEO?
Yes, but please just, I mean, it's a big design agency, but please, for anybody listening who might not be.
Sure. So IDEO is a big design agency, very well known, very established design agency. At the time, they were primarily focused on product design, physical product design, not digital product design. Although I'm sure they did software occasionally, but you know, back then in the late 90s, there wasn't a whole lot of, I'm sure a lot of work for software design, and or a whole lot of work for product designers and, you know, UX thinking or design thinking people. Anyway, they did a deep dive. And what they did was a fake project where they redesigned the shopping cart. And they did the whole process, right? And I, this was my first exposure to seeing what product design companies actually do when they look through this stuff. So they went to, you know, they did their research like in person, you know, going to grocery stores, looking at how people did it. The whole thing, they had this diverse team of people. Anyway, I recommend you watch it.
I'll add it to the show notes for sure, and I'll check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, I was so taken by it that I sent off for the VHS tape, which was really pricey back then, right? It was probably like $50 or $60. I never did anything like that. Sent off for the tape. So I could watch it again, right? Because, you know, nowadays you could just look on YouTube for the video. Back then, that was it. Like, you know, you're lucky if it got a rerun. But anyway, it's so, I said, that's what I want to do for a living, but not in product design because I don't, you know, I don't want to go back to school for product design. I want to do that, you know, somehow that's how I want my world to operate, with a diverse team where you're really digging into user behavior, your customer behavior.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So fast forward to today, and that's what we're all doing now. That's what, you know, experience design is. It's about looking at the journey of the customer and really researching it and looking at business problems from the customer perspective. That's exactly what they were doing.
Wow.
So
now you're the chief experience officer of the American Marketing Association. So I'm definitely interested in hearing a little bit, just the overview about the AMA. And I believe, just having seen a couple of articles, that your role was newly created. I think there was not a previous chief experience officer before you, or was there?
There was a previous chief, one previous chief experience officer, but it was fairly new. It was fairly newly created by Russ Klein, who a handful of years before I was hired. He was a new hire, right? The board decided to take a transformative direction, and they hired Russ Klein to kind of lead that transformation, which is why I am here. It's actually what, you know, his vision, and I think it's still up on LinkedIn under his description. His vision of the AMA is what attracted me to this role. It almost feels like it was custom made just for someone like, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who have the same kinds of passions that I do. But really meaty challenges, right? Coming into this, because, you know, every industry right now pretty much is being disrupted by the changes in technology and digital. So every one of us are, you know, kind of experiencing, no matter where I've gone, whether it's, you know, working in an agency for different clients, and even the clients are experiencing this. We're really, like, a lot of them looking at, not to be too dramatic, but, you know, existential crises, right? Yeah. Like, where it's like, why are we here, and why do we exist, and are we going to exist in the future? And we better really think about this and make sure we're aligned with it. And
go ahead.
I was going to say the AMA is no exception from that. So you're not only talking about an association, which, you know, associations, this is my first association. It's also my first nonprofit that I've had a, you know, full-time employment with. Associations are experiencing massive disruption, right? The whole reason they exist in the past has been through, you know, networking, finding jobs. All of those reasons are really easy to do digitally now. And there are free tools out there now, and done in many ways better, right? Through LinkedIn, you know, as we've mentioned a few times, even in this phone conversation. So there's that, but then there's also the field of marketing, which is, you know, going through massive transformation as well, you know, colliding with technology. You know, you see a lot of roles that are, in fact, my role is very much a combination of marketing and technology. There's a lot there's a lot of roles out there. You know, people are still like, look, certainly there are still traditional, you know, marketing roles that you think about, and the fundamentals are still there. But how we manage and deal with the customer changes how our companies and organizations are structured. So that changes what the association does. Since we serve the individual marketer, we have to think about what marketing is and who a marketer is, and do people even call themselves marketers anymore, and what types of people would call themselves a marketer, or if they are doing marketing but not calling themselves a marketer, like myself, for example, what are they called and how do we serve them as well?
Yeah.
So
a lot going on.
Very meaty stuff, but very, very tactically, the American Marketing Association exists, as I said before, for the individual marketer. And there's been years and years and hundreds of thousands of dollars in research and strategy to understand our primary roles, like at its core. If you remove everything else, you know, kind of like, why do we exist? And it really boils down to three things that if we're doing our job right, then this is who we are for the marketer. We are a great coach throughout their career. We're a sense of place where, you know, like-minded people kind of that sense of community. And that's huge for us, really. And a badge of credibility, like being associated with the American Marketing, just even in the name, has we're finding even in user interviews or customer interviews that the American Marketing Association implies a lot of clout. You know, even if people don't know why, I mean, even just the name.
It sounds very official. The name sounds
right. Yeah. So there's a lot to that. So those are the three areas that are core that we really stick to. But we're in the process of a complete transformation of our business model. Right now, within our roadmap, there's about a 3 to 5 year roadmap that we've outlined. And as it gets, you know, further out, it gets less clarity and focus. We just in February, on February 11th, we just released entirely new technology systems, which is a huge deal for us. So we're still going through the process of stabilizing after those launches. The financial system, our database, so our CRM, and our content management system as well, all new.
Yeah.
And just to put that in context of what a big deal that is, our previous system was set up in 1999. So back when I was watching this Nightline show, they were establishing the system that had existed in January of this year that we switched.
Wow.
So major changes, not just from the way the website looks or operates, but the way all the processes, not just from within the support center, which most people, we call ourselves the support center, not headquarters. Not just from the support center, but also throughout our community, like the way all the chapters operate. So we have over 350 collegiate chapters, over 74 professional chapters, an academic community with multiple special interest groups. All of these that have been established through the years are now having to shift how they work, because every digital affects everything, right? And the tools affect everything. So it's a big, like I said, a big meaty project. That we're learning all sorts of things that I think even you know, businesses going through transformation that have made a massive change aren't even understand that, you know, I feel like there's a lot of firsts that we're experiencing and pushing through because we're an association and because we are a marketing association, more specifically, because we're full of our association, our customer is full of people who are doing the types of things that we're attempting to do with the association. It's very meta, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's great to hear that, and it's great to hear the changes you're in the middle of as as you just said, a lot of the people in marketing are dealing with the same kind of changes and looking at, like, how do we deal with those challenges, particularly inside of large organizations, when smaller, nimbler, small, tiny companies like direct to consumer brands, you know, the millennial quote unquote brands, the Glossiers of this world, are developing their brands and marketing directly with the consumer, talking directly with social media, with none of the legacy systems that they need, that the large organizations need to change and transform and contend with. Also equally interesting to hear you say that when it boils down to it, it's you're dedicated to the individual marketer. I wasn't sure how much of the split of your attention or the attention of the AMA was towards individuals or organizations or businesses. Because I've come across the AMA, I've been to a couple of events here and there. Like, I went to one in Chicago last year that was really great with four startup founders who were sharing about their journeys and how they use marketing and branding to grow their businesses. And it was both really interesting talks and Q&As and great people to talk and network with. But beyond those events, it's difficult to figure exactly. I knew it was a national organization, but it's really great to hear a little bit of what you're working on at the moment. Just being conscious of time, there's another topic, so I'm just not doing a very elegant segue here. Being conscious of time, and one topic that you mentioned that you're interested in that I thought would be great to hear about was talking through this intersection of video games, fitness, objects like trackers and data visual, like the quantified self movement, or at least that's the way I understood it. I wasn't sure where your attention or personal interests were around these topics.
I've never heard that before. The quantified self, is that a thing? Is that like...
Oh, yeah, that's a thing. Okay. Oh, sorry. So that's me understanding what you told me by email.
I like that. Quantified self. So... Here's a little bit of a segue from that. We just got through a design sprint. We just finished a design sprint exploring, a hypothesis for a business model. And one of the things that we had brought in at the beginning of the design sprint were looking at other either websites or products that actually can serve as inspiration. And I completely geeked out and brought in Destiny, showing Destiny 2, which is a video game, console game, and talked about the complexities behind, game developers have, we think we have it hard trying to navigate through the experience for the customer. Game developers have so many inputs. So that's what's fascinating to me about it. And at the time that we were going through it, they had Destiny 2 actually technically, had just released new Gambit maps and a new way. It's part of the gameplay. But basically,
just to be sure I know, is it a battle arena shoot 'em up type thing where you're like first person and you have your, is it a team play or individual play?
It's team play, although you can play. I do the PvP player versus player. So I do team play, and what I enjoy about it is that I can go on a fire team with friends that we have from Tennessee that we've known. So my husband and I play together. We literally have two Xboxes next to each other in the basement. We're sitting side by side playing on two separate consoles and playing with our friends. We're oftentimes playing with our friends, although they haven't been playing Destiny lately. But when I was, because they had just released all these new maps and new gameplay and adjusted how they handled gameplay, it was top of mind, right? And I was just thinking about how complicated, their releases must be, because we're going through now all the bug fixes and trying to reach stabilization here with our releases. That's, nothing compared to releasing it to a bunch of really passionate gamers that are banging around on your system and have very strong opinions about your game. and granted, they have a whole lot of money to do it, but even still, it doesn't make it less complicated. So, just looking through in terms of how do you address making it it complex enough or challenging enough for the players who keep coming back, but not so frustrating and unapproachable that somebody can't pick it up, right, and start playing it, which is a huge challenge, yes. right? I can't imagine how, you know, you've got, and even is. Just thinking about the different, you know, you're choosing your different player types, you know, your different guardian types. That's your basically your player, your, you know, I guess warrior, fighter, whatever you want to call it. They call them guardians in Destiny. You know, you're choosing the different weapons. You're choosing different, you know, you choose different weapons based on where you're going and what, you know, are you playing Gambit? Are you playing Crucible? Are you playing, you know, there are all these different game types that even different weapons do better against different enemies and in different types of games. And then, you know, it's all these complicated things that get adjusted over time, you know, whether they're, you know, buffing a certain weapon or nerfing it back a little because it's too, you know, too powerful, and just fascinating, right?
It is fascinating. The constant tweaks towards balance in all those kinds of games, mm-hmm. even more so that while tons of people are playing and participating, and tournaments and esports also just come out a whole other set of balancing.
Yeah.
It's super interesting to talk about. I could also geek out about it for a while. And also, you just made me think of something, which is just a thought. It's not really, it's not even going anywhere. But you know how those games have very extensive, of course, huge teams working on this, right? And extensive beta releases, alpha, and then beta releases to test a lot of the gameplay live to check for the bugs before the global release.
Yeah.
And startups in the Silicon Valley have done the same thing. And there's more and more speak in the marketing world for software and business software of or services of doing beta releases. Mm-hmm. But the level of interest, there's an army of people who want to play a game that want to be elected to play those and to test those beta services. Mm-hmm. When it comes to business software, maybe slightly less people absolutely dying to get in.
Right.
I just thought it was an interesting, even though I've been in rooms where we talk about the importance of the beta release, there's not that many users that are extremely motivated to go test and half break or check how it's working or not.
Oh, sure.
And I don't have any solutions, just a random thought that came up while you were talking.
Well, certainly we talk about, in fact, I think, you know, Russ quotes, and we've been passing around this quote lately too. I think it's a LinkedIn co-founder that said this: if you're not embarrassed by your first release, then you released it too late. Which I think is very true. What's fascinating, and I'm actually working with attorneys and trademark attorneys on a panel, an upcoming panel in May, to talk about how lawyers and marketers can work together. But one of the things we're discussing is how much technology and software development and how software development teams work together and companies work, how much that's affecting marketing and really everything, but especially marketing right now. You know, there's a lot of talk about the agile process and people, you know, we're all adopting faster because you have to get out there faster, right? It's, you know, speed is critical. It's not even a nice to have, or it's not even that it gives you an advantage. It's you die if you can't get out there fast enough. So as a result, we're releasing all of these very flawed products and services and technology and the expectations too. You think about your expectations when you go online to buy something or even interact with a website are super high because you're dealing with Google and you're dealing with Amazon. You know, you're dealing with software that has, you know, millions, if not billions of dollars behind the creation of it and the maintenance of it. And, you know, you're playing in a world, if you're part of an association that's been working on software that's been since 1999, like having to play in that world with those customer expectations is really difficult because, you know, in many ways you can't live up to that because, you don't have the software development team to be able to accommodate that or even the speed to release that. So you end up with, you know, people you know, expecting that the cart process or the purchase process should be as smooth as Amazon, you know, when dealing with a different type of product, but the expectation is still the same.
So as a word of, sorry, were you?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, as a word of a segue, just also still being conscious of time, and for anybody listening who might have the experience of frustration or anything thereabouts in dealing with a large organization that they think is not on par with the Google and Amazons of the world, what's the word of advice you have for anybody who's dealing with those kinds of situations these days in design and in marketing and...
The word of advice would be to emulate software development, and which is what people are doing. The tendency is to want to, you know, kind of fall back on what you know, and go back to what software development calls waterfall process, which is basically building it to perfection or building it as close to perfection, and then releasing it when it's ready and fully baked. The advice would be to, you know, to develop some really strong armor and put your product out there when it may not be completely ready, which is a scary thing for people to do, especially people who aren't used to putting incomplete stuff up there and having to, you know, fix it live. So my advice would be to pick up some, you know, basic software development processes and you know, read up on it, read up on Agile.
Is there one book that you'd recommend for that?
You know what I would recommend right now that we've been looking at? There is a gentleman, what's his name? Alexander Osterwalder, who worked collaboratively, actually. He created a business model canvas and wrote a book called Business Model Generation. And it's about, really, it's looking at, and in many ways I see it as taking marketing and business design and creating it in such a way that you can be really agile with how you're looking at your business. And you can do really any structure, as long as it's simplifying what you're trying to figure out, and as long as you're measuring it in the same way. I actually have the scientific method, an infographic of the scientific method printed out in my office, hanging on the wall. So if anybody comes in and starts talking about solutions or what's not working or what isn't working, I point back to, okay, what is the question you're trying to solve? Because that is our primary problem is that, you know, we go down a road of throwing a product out there without going back to what are we testing? What are we trying to find out? And, you know, when will we know if it's working or not? So I would go back to software development and, you know, look at even applying applying the scientific method to how you're working through things and look at everything like a test. Everything should be, and you're constantly having to validate whether or not something is working for your customer and your business or not.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. Let's just to wrap things up, I usually finish with a cool down questions, a few supposedly simple questions at least, or at least I start with an easy one because it's the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. So do you have a favorite ice cream flavor?
You know what? There's the Moose Tracks, but it has to be the chocolate Moose Tracks. I absolutely love it. It's kind of hard to find the chocolate Moose Tracks version, but
yeah, usually it's a vanilla cream based, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, cool. We talked about Destiny 2. Is there another game that you usually enjoy and recommend playing? Could be video game, could be like board game.
We started playing Red Dead Redemption, although that's Rockstar Games who did Grand Theft Auto as well. Although I think, you know, it's beta, like you were talking about before. So there were some issues with it. So I kind of got a little burnout on it. And I think they're upgrading it. But I like, you know, I like lots of different board games and video games. I just mainly look at the top rated ones and check them out. There's Exploding Kittens. Cool. I would highly recommend for a light game.
It is. Yeah. That's good fun. Yes. Yeah. That's great. Cool. What's the last piece of art or media that had an impact on you?
Last piece of art or media that had an impact on me. Wow. I think it was yesterday, I came across a Google. It was like Think with Google, and they were talking through, it was just a presentation on video games and the state of video games. It was like presenting some findings, and it was just fun. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, like deeply meaningful, but it was neat because they made it kind of game-like presenting it. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. And last one, if you could give one thing to everyone, like you make a wish and everybody has it, what might that be?
Probably peace.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. So just wrapping up, where can people find you? Where can people find you? You mentioned there was something coming up in May, a talk, or obviously like people can look up the American Marketing Association. Anywhere else you are.
Yeah, I would say if you look up the American Marketing Association and look at some of our events, most of our events, I think upcoming in May, I'm on a panel, but it's really for a trademark attorney. So I don't know that they'd actually enjoy that.
How many I have in my audience, maybe a few, but
mainly American Marketing Association events.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, Jennifer. I really appreciated the conversation. It was awesome.
Thank you. It was fun.
All right, another episode goes by. It has been 10 days, about 10 days since the last episode I published, which is more not because I didn't record, but because I didn't find the time to edit. So if everything goes to plan, I'll be publishing another one with less frequency before next weekend. So in less than a week, by midweek, I'm hoping. But I do also have a lot of work this week. So we'll see what we can sort out. Anyway, I really, really thank you for listening. If you're listening to this point, please consider sharing it with a friend. Even better, please consider giving me a review on Apple Podcasts /iTunes or in Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts, Google Podcasts. 5-star review, put a few words, or send me a note or send me an email if you'd like to be on the show or if you appreciate the show. It really makes a difference. It makes a difference so that I know, and it's encouraging. It's encouraging me to stick to my own timelines. It's encouraging me to stick to my calendar. It's encouraging me to keep talking and reaching out to other guests and look at experimenting. And if you're interested in this experiment of potentially playing role-playing games and recording it, give me a shout as well. That's about it. All right. Have a great morning, afternoon, night, whatever time of day or night it is for you. Thanks. Bye.